Eastern Municipal Water District Board of Directors to order for its regular meeting on September 18th, 2019. Time being 9 o'clock or just a little bit after. Jeff, would you lead us in the flag salute, please?
Please join me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
April, do we have any guests this morning?
Yes, we have our team with Woodward and Curran. We also have a guest, Mindy, from Umbrella Pacific, Umbrella Pack. And we have a special guest speaker, Manuel Mira, who is going to be speaking later.
Super. Okay. Agenda item one is for public comments, and it is for anyone that wishes to address the board on anything that is not on today's agenda. And we have one speaker card, Manuel Mira. Manuel.
So, my name is Manuel Mira. I am in the Riverside County 4-H, and my club is the Marietta Mustangs. Now, 4-H is a youth development program, and I'm in a citizenship project, which helps me learn about the government of America today. And I'd just like to thank you all for cleaning our water, sending it to us, and for doing it all at a fair price. Thank you.
And thank you.
Thank you.
We appreciate it.
Thank you for coming.
You're a credit to the youth today. I just wish more kids your age and perhaps a little older would be have a civics class like this. And so one of our prime things that we do here for in this water district is provide agriculture with clean, reusable water. And we thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, with that, let's go to executive reports.
Thank you, President Slauson, members of the board. Good morning. You have my written report. I wanted to start out with kind of an overview and the legislative session overview of a couple of bills that we were following. One, I think, that made the news quite a bit over the last couple of weeks was SB1. SB1 by Senator Atkins was the California Environmental Public Health and Workers' Defense Act of 2019, and the bill basically sought to establish a baseline of 2017 to maintain requirements for public health, environmental employee standards, and other issues. And it was really to circumvent any changes in those regulations or positions from the Trump administration. So it was a little bit of a political bill between the state and the Trump administration. One of the problems with the bill is it really created a broad array of what I'd call unintended consequences, particularly for the water community. And one of those was really what you've heard about probably in the news is the voluntary agreement negotiations. And that is where the water users upstream of the Delta on the Delta River system, the water users, the environmental community, the State Water Resources Control Board, and other stakeholders were negotiating voluntary agreements for the use and flows in those tributaries to sustain environmental health and the economy. And it's probably one of the more productive things that have been going on in California water in many years in terms of reconciling those issues. Although last week the bill was amended fairly substantially to address a number of other troubling issues. One of those troubling issues was expanding the definition of waste in waters of the state and other issues. They were amended out of the bill. The one key item that was kept in the bill was the application of the California Endangered Species Act to the federal Central Valley Project. The effect of that would have been to essentially kill the voluntary agreement negotiations because of protracted litigation. So as a result, and the legislature passed the bill out, without that, or with that last troubling item in the bill. And there was a very broad coalition of the public water agencies, business, ag interests, who wrote the governor asking him to veto the bill. Similarly, Senator Feinstein and key Democratic congressional members also weighed in and asked the governor to consider not allowing the bill to be enacted. And as a result, after the bill was passed on the 13th, on September 14th, Governor Newsom did come out and indicate his intent to veto the bill. So the bill is not going to go forward. His veto message really was that the bill was somewhat symbolic. It basically did not actually provide the authority to rebuff some of the Trump administration's environmental changes. And he very specifically noted that it impacts the state ability to rely on best available science and would cause protracted litigation over water issues that are progressing very well, including the voluntary agreements. So I think that's good news, but yeah, I think we can expect to see something in the legislature similar next year. More locally, we have recharged a record amount of groundwater this year, of imported water. To date, we've recharged 12,217 acre-feet of water from MET. So we have all our pre-deliveries for calendar year 2020 complete under the Sevoa Settlement Agreement, and we've delivered 635 acre-feet of water towards the 2021 Settlement Agreement. So we are way ahead on groundwater recharge. Jeff and his staff have done a tremendous job of maximizing the recharge rates in those basins, and we continue to put water in, and MET has indicated that they would like to continue with the replenishment deliveries for 2020, at least through the end of the fall. Also, I always look this time of year at what our water conservation levels are. As we know, the first 2 weeks of September were a little bit warm, and so we really, what I like to do is track back and see what our water conservation levels are. We've done a, I think, outstanding job on water conservation. We're going to have a presentation later on today on our conservation programs. But specifically, if you look at our baseline comparison year is 2013. That's established by the State Water Resources Control Board. Even with all the growth in the service area for the first part of September, with exceptionally warm weather, we had an 8% reduction compared to 2013. That's not growth corrected, and so if you think of how much growth we've had since then, it's really quite substantial. And so we also look at per capita use, because that really talks about kind of individual conservation. We are at an 18% decrease relative to 2013 for this very warm period in September. So I think that what that tells us is the structural conservation programs that we're putting in place, the turf removal projects, all those programs have a very significant effect, and we're seeing that kind of as long-lasting structural conservation with our customers. Under items of the interest to the board, I have a couple of items I'd like to mention. One, the Water Reuse Association held its annual symposium in San Diego last week. It was had record attendance. There was over 1,000 participants in the symposium. We had from 38 states, internationally from 12 countries on 5 continents. So it was a really well-attended event. Probably the most important kind of featured event in the symposium was the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency released the draft of its Federal Water Reuse Action Plan. This is the first time the federal water agencies led by EPA have ever put out a plan relative to advancing water recycling. The plan was released and presented by Dave Ross, who's the assistant administrator of EPA for water. So these are just sub-cabinet level people that are very key in Washington, D.C. And this plan was put together in collaboration with a number of the federal agencies. So there was a presentation given on the plan that had the federal, kind of the federal water family. So EPA, of course, but the Bureau of Reclamation, Brenda Berman was there representing USBR, Corps of Engineers, Department of Agriculture and Department of Energy, and also the White House Council on Environmental Quality. So I think it was a very well-received plan. The plan's on the Federal Register right now, out for comment for 90 days. It has 46 recommendations, and I think it's a real step forward nationally for water reuse. which ultimately, and we hope, will lead more funding for water recycling projects through Congress and more regulatory support. Last, I want to mention there was another flurry in the California State Legislature at the end of the calendar year, and that related to the introduction of bond legislation for new water and climate resilience bonds. And so within the last couple of weeks of the legislature, there were two bills introduced, AB 352 by Eduardo Garcia and AB 1298 by Mullen. Those were also introduced with major amendments, SB 45 by Allen, which was an earlier legislation. None of these got out of the legislature, so they all been made 2 years bills. But they were in somewhat reaction, we believe, to two things. First, Joe Cabes, who we know has been involved in several bond initiatives before, he had filed a proposition and ballot initiative for a $7.88 billion climate impact bond. These bonds deal with forest fires, they deal with climate resiliency, but also water and water resiliency. So that got filed with the Attorney General's office for the November 2020 ballot, so we believe the legislature kind of wanted to get into the act and see if they could put together a bond as well. The governor has also signaled his potential interest in moving a bond forward to support the administration's water resilience plan that they've been putting together. As you know, AQUA and others have given information to the administration. That plan is going to be released at the end of the calendar year, and we're hearing that the governor is also supportive of a potential bond. It looks like the $7.88 billion bond that Joe Cabes is putting on the ballot is probably a little high based on polling. Polling is saying that the voters may be open to approving a bond that's more in the $3 to $4 billion range. So we'll see how that goes, and we're going to be tracking this very closely. But what I think we can anticipate in the beginning of the 2020 calendar year is there will be a big flurry in the legislature to put together a bond, and we'll try to make sure that it certainly provides for water projects. Last, I left a copy on the board members' seat of the Municipal Water Leaders magazine. I only want to talk about two things. One, there's a great article on the EPA's development of the Water Use Action Plan. And also, there is a stellar argument, or a stellar article on Eastern Municipal Water Districts and our recycled water retrofit program featuring none other than Joe Ma, of course. And so you might want to look at those, too. I think they're a real nice tribute to Eastern. And that concludes my report. Are there any questions?
Will we be able to get autographed copies?
Yes. We'll put off the table outside. Joe will autograph copies. Any other questions or comments?
Every question?
Thank you very much. I also want to thank our special guests here today. That was very nice of you to come and appreciate it. Hope you come back in a future meeting. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Okay. Laura.
Yes. Yesterday we held a kickoff for our Build for the Future project, which is a coins replacement project. I want to thank Charles and his team for leading that effort. The core team and our partners have just finished a seven-week project planning session for the two-year budget on time and on budget. We invited all of the department heads and their subject matter experts to the kickoff, and they were provided an overview of the project. In addition, we had a great conversation about change management and the keys to success of what is going to be a very complex project. The change management piece will be a critical component because, as you know, we've had our coins system for over 25 years. So it's going to be a significant change to both our employees and our customers, and we want to make sure that that's the number one priority of execution of this project. As we promised, we'll be bringing updates to the board periodically, and the first update we have planned is the second meeting of November. So I just wanted to give you that update.
Super. Thank you. Nick.
Yes, I just wanted to let you know that at this point we have now essentially successfully completed our well drilling for 201, 202, and 203 wells. As you'll recall, these are three wells which are very critical to our SARCUP program. Also, a challenging project given the location of these well facilities, so there was very careful coordination with the local community. So we've wrapped up those well drilling activities. The well 203 is essentially complete. We just have a few punch list items and some site cleanup. And the good news is that all three wells are capable of pumping well beyond our expectation in the order of about 2,000 plus gallons per minute, which, you know, we would have been happy with about 1,500 or so. So they're going to be very good performing wells for us. As you know, these wells are part of our SARCUP program, and the next major project in support of that is the Mountain Avenue West Recharge Facility. And I think Joe wants to provide an update on that project and upcoming coordination activities with the city.
Okay. You're on.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of the board. As Nick mentioned, we have awarded the construction contract to H&H for the Mountain Avenue West Basin Replenishment Facility. In fact, last week we held our pre-construction meeting with the contractor, and the contractor did confirm that he intends to haul the excess material, approximately 370,000 cubic yards, to the Savova Tribe Horseshoe area for the tribe's benefit. So we are working very closely with the city of San Jacinto. The contractor will be developing a traffic plan that will need city council approval. So we're working closely with the city. They've indicated to us that they have a project that was scheduled for this year to run and overlay a section of Mountain Avenue. And we've asked them to defer and delay that pavement project. We are in the process of discussing with them the impact upon them of deferring that project. So more to come on the effort, but we are working very closely with the city, and we plan to be in front of City Council sometime in late October to present the hauling plan and an agreement as far as the deferment of their paving project.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay. Jeff.
Good morning. I just want to give a brief update on the ongoing repairs for San Diego Pipeline Number 4. This is the pipeline that leads to the standard filtration plant and takes water south into the San Diego County, across county lines. Met's jurisdiction ends about 5 miles south of the county line. And just beyond that, there's a leak on that large diameter pipe, it's an 80-inch pipe, that they began work on repairing that leak just last week. And it started with installing two bulkheads. That work is nearly completed. Actually, I believe the bulkheads may be completed by now. But there's a little bit of hope that it would be a simple patch repair, you know, 10-day shutdown, and they could be back up and running. And as it turns out, the leak was caused by a failure of the Carnegie joint, which is a fancy way of talking about a double spigot on a large diameter steel pipe. So the repairs are more extensive than everybody had hoped, but it's going well, I understand. It looks like the repairs are going to continue in October. So we've been coordinating with Rancho Combs. Actually, I spoke to Rancho yesterday, and obviously they have an interest to begin cyclic deliveries, and so that's the impact really to Eastern and Eastern WMCs is it's delaying their ability to take cyclic deliveries of water into the groundwater basin. No fault of anybody, but it is just kind of a fact of what's going on right now. We're hopeful that as Met and San Diego County Water Authority both work to install what they call a passive relief system, that we can get a higher flow into that pipeline. Right now we're limited to about 30 CFS. If we can get that up to 100, say 100 CFS, we may be able to do some interim cyclic deliveries for Rancho. So that's kind of where we're at with that whole issue right now. I'll try to keep you guys apprised as the work progresses. That's all I
have. Good. All right. Let's go to agenda item 3, which is the consent calendar. We'll accept a motion and a second for approval of items 3A through 3G.
I'll move the consent calendar.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously with Director Corona and record absent. On the action calendar, agenda item 4A, which is approve and authorize award of contract with Canyon Springs Enterprises doing business as RSH Construction for $2,382,416 under specification 1376W for well 59 wellhead treatment facility, and the additional appropriation of $3,049,500. morning.
Good morning, Mr. President, fellow members of the board. I'm happy to be here today to present to you our Well 59 Wellhead Treatment Facilities project. The project is located in the city of Paris, just south of the Moreno Valley border and southeast of the March Air Reserve Base. It's situated along Indian Avenue, just south of Harley Knox and across the street from the Home Depot Distribution Center. The well produces 1,000 gallons per minute. It's approximately 700 foot deep. And back in May 2016, we were shut down the well due to lowered provisional health advisory levels for perfluorinated compounds, per and polyfluoroalkyl substances, commonly known today as PFAS. And the EPA has directed agencies to treat these levels as maximum contaminant levels. So why PFAS? PFAS is currently present in our groundwater due to historic firefighting activities at the base, and as a result of those firefighting activities that have since been curtailed, that PFAS has entered the groundwater and has created a localized plume. So with that, Well 59 and two private wells in the vicinity were shut down, and actually recently Well 56 was shut down also, or shown there on the bottom of that exhibit on the right. So as a result of the shutdown of these wells, we reached out to the United States Air Force and entered into two agreements known as ESCA 1 and ESCA 2. These are co-op agreements, one to provide for interim water supply until a solution is complete, and ESCA 2 for the actual solution itself, which is wellhead treatment in this case. By way of project overview, the project consists of rehabilitating the existing Well 59. It also consists of yard piping, electrical upgrades, as well as situating granular activated carbon vessels on site. There's four, two lead and two lag vessels, and a backwash tank. So back in late August, we received bids under specification 1376, and Canyon Springs Enterprises, doing business as RSH, a contractor that we often work with, provided the lowest responsive and responsible bid in the amount of approximately $2.4 million. We also received four other bids, and those bids came in real close, with the exception of the highest bid being an outlier. But the lowest four bids were very close, which represents very strong contract documents. However, our engineer's estimate was $2.2 million, a difference of about 10%. Which we feel was a result of risk in the current bid climate, and the risk for site work on the project. So with that, we reached out to the Air Force to discuss our bid results, and they concurred with the bid results and committed to advancing an ESCA 2 amendment for the difference to make us financially whole on the project. In addition to the construction contract, we're looking to advance engineering services during construction contract with the engineer of record, Kennedy Jinks. The scope of work for this work would include reviewing submittals, RFIs, supporting testing, startup, and commissioning of the facility, and preparing an operations and maintenance manual, electronic operations and maintenance manual for the new treatment facility. Kennedy Jinks was previously competitively selected for the project, and they're on a variety of our annual contract lists. They also have previous project experience in the area, working on March Air Reserve Base groundwater recovery feasibility studies and our Moreno Valley groundwater development program. Their fee is approximately $162,000, which is commensurate with the level of effort. By way of schedule, we look to advance the project just as soon as possible to meet the expectations of the Air Force and complete within a year from today, more or less. And the photo there on the bottom shows the Palmarito plant riverside, which is a similar granular activated carbon facility. We'll have basically those same type vessels. So with that, I'd like to recommend that we advance a contract with RSH in the amount of approximately $2.4 million. Also execute a contract with Kennedy Jinks for the engineering services during construction in the amount of approximately $162,000. Also, administrative award of other ancillary contracts to fully implement the project, which would take us to requesting additional appropriation for approximately $3 million, taking the full project cost to approximately $3.8 million, which, again, is fully reimbursable by the United States Air Force. So with that, I'd like to entertain any questions.
Yeah, just be clear, the Air Force is paying for it, but we're managing the contract, correct?
Yes, that's exactly right.
Okay.
In addition to that, I might point out that, as Greg mentioned, when the PFAS was detected in the well, we took the well immediately out of service. And so part of the ESCA agreement includes compensation to us for water that we had to purchase to replace the water for that well since it's been out of service. So not only is the Air Force paying for the wellhead treatment project itself, but they have been paying for that replacement water over time until this well and this water purification system can be put back on, or put online.
If I can also maybe add to this discussion, General Manager Paul Jones and I did have an opportunity this week to meet with a new commander at March Air Reserve Base, Colonel Melissa Colburn, and we did brief her on this project as well as the status of Well 56 and our collaboration to continue to look for not only implementing this solution at Well 59, but entering into a tolling agreement for Well 56 and looking for opportunities to continue that collaboration to be able to provide treatment for Well 56. She was very receptive and appreciative of the information that we shared with her, and she, in fact, expressed an interest to visit with the board and our facilities as well.
Super.
Thank you.
Okay. We have no additional questions. We'll entertain a motion and a second.
I'll move the item.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously with Director Record and Corona absent. Agenda item 4B is approve and authorize agreements with Woodward and Curran for Cactus Avenue Corridor Groundwater Wells Environmental Impact Report for $213,916, the Paris North Groundwater Monitoring Initial Study and Mitigated Negative Declaration, which is $161,543, and the appropriation in the amount of $375,459. Al, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, President Sullivan and fellow board members. I'm going to be presenting the CEQA award contracts for the item. Agenda-wise, I'll look at the Paris North Groundwater Program overview, the CEQA proposals, and the Cactus Avenue Corridor groundwater wells, as well as the Paris North Basin Groundwater Monitoring Program. We'll look over the request of the proposals, the firm selection, and our recommendations. So for an overview of the Paris North Groundwater, on April 1st, we submitted an application to State Water Resource Groundwater Sustainability Funds, and this is for the Paris North Groundwater Contamination Prevention Remediation Program. We are looking at the amount of a grant of $36.5 million. The Paris North Groundwater Program consists of several projects. This is the Marina Valley Wells, that's well 65 and 66, which you do have just have approved for the addendum for that. The Cactus Avenue Corridor Wells and the South Wells. To kind of orient you to where this is located, it's located in Paris as well as the Marina Valley, also in the Marina Valley. To the north, the city of in the top circle is parts of Wells 65 and 66. The Cactus Avenue, which we call the North Wells, is just north of March Air Force Base. The east side, which is part of the Cactus Avenue, is to the east of March Air Force Base, and the south is located just in front of Lake Paris. The purpose of the Paris North Groundwater Program are three. One is to prevent the migration of groundwater contamination. The second is to remediate the groundwater area concerns. And the third is to provide the district with additional local water supplies. Our application project timeline that we committed to was that CEQA would be done by May 2020, preliminary design by December 2020, final design by 2021, monitoring reporting plan by April 2022, and the construction overall to be completed by March 2023. And that is a very quick timeline to get all these three projects done with this period of time. So the CEQA status, so our efforts are already underway. Particularly, we have already amended the well 65 and 66. Right now, well 204, the South Well, is in progress for CEQA, and it's projected to be completed by January 2020. The efforts that are now needed to be completed are the two nodes before you right now, the Cactus Avenue Corridor well, which includes the north and east wells. We're looking to be completed by May 2020, as well as the Parish North Basin Groundwater Monitoring Plan, also scheduled to be completed by May 2020. These are separate but related projects for Parish North Groundwater, for the Parish Groundwater, because depending upon the funding, will depend upon the work that needs to be done by the Groundwater Monitoring Program. The two CEQA processes are in fast track. Again, these are in order to meet that deadline, so the initial draft of January 2020, with the final CEQA to be done by May 2020. So for the Cactus Avenue Corridor groundwater wells, we're looking to do an environmental impact report for the development and operation of groundwater for the extraction, treatment, and distribution facilities within this groundwater basins. This is the project is looking to construct six extraction wells, four in the north, two in the east. This includes a treatment, blending, and disinfection, and 30,000 linear feet of pipeline. Again, this is in the central location, north of March Air Force Base and east of March Air Force Base. For the Paris North Basin Groundwater Monitoring Program, we're looking at a CEQA document, ISND, for the siting, construction, operation, and monitoring wells for this program. We're looking up to 10 monitoring wells, two in the what we call the Rainier Valley wells area, five in the Cactus Avenue Corridor, and three to the south. Again, reorient yourself. The monitoring Marina Valley, there's two of them to the north, Cactus Avenue, which is both the north and east wells, both have five, and the south monitoring wells have three. So the request proposal went out on July 18th, 2019. Five firms were solicited from our as needed environmental service list. We received three proposals. This was ESA, Helix, and Woodard and Kern. They included a condensed schedule for completing meeting the timeline. We also included an optional NEPA requirements, which we felt was needed because we could be going for federal fundings for the Cactus Avenue Corridor. We wanted those CEQA documents to be prepared for that. Criteria selection, we looked at the personnel qualification, level of effort, approach of understanding scope of work, the fees, quality proposals, and thoroughness, and exceptions. The rating of the firms, Woodard and Kern came out with both the Cactus Avenue Corridor and the Parish North. Their scores were 4.2 and 4.1. Additionally, their fees were the lowest for the Cactus Corridor. They're at $214,000. And then the Parish North monitoring, they were at $161,000. But they also included an alternative for the Parish North, which was instead of an EIR, which was an ISND. That is reflected in the cost. They did propose, again, like I said, an ISMND. They were also proposing to do a site evaluation that included doing a site evaluation for the ISMND. This would make it a project level rather than a programmatic CEQA. Overall, it would be a cost reduction, but the CEQA document would be a higher level than what was originally requested. Our recommendation would be approve and authorize the agreement with Woodard and Kern in an amount of $214,000. In preparation of the EIR for the Cactus Avenue Corridor groundwater well project. The second will be to approve and authorize agreement with Woodard and Kern in the amount of $161,000 for the preparation of the ISMND for the Parish North groundwater monitoring program, and approve and authorize appropriation of $375,000 to fund the CEQA effort. And with that, I have two questions.
Have any questions, sir?
David. The full EIR for the Cactus Avenue corridor, what triggered in their mind the need for the full EIR versus a mitigated negative net?
There was a lot more, there's going to be more the unknowns of the pipeline as well as facilities were unknown, so it was more broad programmatic type of EIR than a project level. So there was more of unknowns and there was more risks that were involved with that.
Okay. So as they do the initial study, could they change their mind?
That would have to be determined as we're going through the project right now. But right now, it's more of a programmatic right now. The details, there's not very good details of the project yet. We're still trying to determine the alignments, as well as we have required any facilities for that.
Okay. All right.
No. Okay. Do you want to introduce the Woodard and Kern team, please?
Jennifer and Haley from Woodard and Kern. Jennifer was our previous CEQA agent that helped us in the previous times before.
Super. Okay. We'll entertain a motion and a second.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously with Director Record and Corona absent. Agenda item 4C, which is approve and authorize the purchase of a membrane filtration system from Wigan Water Technologies for $613,358 for the Purified Water Replenishment Brine Concentration Pilot Project and the appropriation in the amount of $688,358. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. President and Board of Directors. I just have a verbal report today.
Okay.
The PWR brine concentration pilot project will test closed circuit reverse osmosis, or called CCRO. This process utilizes conventional RO filters, but it operates them in a more batch-like process versus a linear once-pass process. So this innovative approach will be the first comprehensive test of CCRO as the primary RO process on recycled water. The objective of this pilot testing is to maximize the amount of purified water that can be produced through the PWR project and minimize brine generation. And I wanted to highlight our partners. We have partners with Metropolitan Water District. They provided us a grant through their Future Supply Action Funding Program of up to $500,000. We also got a grant up to $223,000 from the State Water Resources Control Board under their Recycled Water Funding Pilot Program. And then I want to talk about, we have a partnership with Cal Poly Pomona. The students and undergraduate students and faculty there are going to assist us in the operation overseeing of the pilot project, specifically doing some water quality testing and taking some lab results. As part of the proposed pilot project, the district will be relocating the current CCRO pilot unit that's been operating at the Paris Desalters. A membrane filtration system is required on recycled water. Currently, the CCRO is on the brackish water as a brine concentrator, so it's already gone through the filtration system there. Using it on the recycled water, we need a ultrafiltration or filtration system in front of the RO. So on July 23rd, 2019, we requested bids. August 21st, we received two bids, with the apparent low bidder being Wigan Water Technologies. After negotiating with Wigan, they submitted a formal quote in the amount of $613,358. Wigan has extensive experience in building containerized membrane filtration systems for similar pilot projects. Additional appropriation of $688,358 is requested to fund the purchase of the membrane system and for expenses for district staff that's going to install the unit and operate the unit. So staff recommendation is for the approval and authorization of the execution of the general manager or his designee purchase of the membrane filtration system from Wigan Water Technologies for the Purified Water Replenishment Brine Concentration Project and additional appropriation of $688,358. So back to any questions.
There's information on Wigan's proposal in the back of your board package, including background on the company, the specific aspects of it, and the warranties. The company's been around for industrial treatment a long time. They've been in business since 1965, and they're an American company.
So this new membrane filtration, this is going to be on the front end of the existing pilot or the back end of the existing
front end. Yeah, okay. Before it goes into the CCRO system,
cool.
The DesalTech system.
Okay. Any questions?
I'll move the item.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously with Director Record and Corona absent. With that, we'll go to some information items. 5A, which is SB 998 update. Charles?
Thank you for this opportunity for Chris and I to provide you an update on the activities that we've done today to get us prepared for the Senate Bill 998. So by way of background, the bill was passed or signed by the California governor in September of 2018, and it applies to water utilities such as the MWD that supply water to more than 200 connections of this population. The bill's primary objective is to minimize the number of Californians that go without water due to their inability to pay. And there's some provisions that Crystal will be walking us through this morning. And when does it go live? It goes live. We need to be compliant by February 1st, 2020. So what have we been doing since the last time we met in May of 2019? Well, following that board update, we hosted a regional workshop here in this boardroom. We had seven local agencies attend, agencies such as Rancho Water, El Sonoro, Western, other sub-public utilities also in attendance. And the goal of that regional workshop was to share ideas, best practices, and most importantly was to gain alignment in how we all implement SB 998 within our respective utilities. In June of this year, we then started working with our Public and Government Affairs Office and our IT team to create an online web form for customers choosing to take advantage of this opportunity that they can go in and follow a very methodical process to submit their information and apply, if you will, for SB 998. We also created a paper form for those that don't have access to a computer or internet, just so we can cater to those customers as well. And then lastly here, in July of this year, we finalized the requirements for our current billing system. We met with IT and ensured that the requirements made sense to them and they can achieve those changes in our current billing system, as well as identify internal business processes that needed to be updated to ensure that, again, we were already in compliance to report SB 998. So with that, I'd like to pass this on to Christy, but before I do that, I'd like to acknowledge her efforts on this endeavor here. She has done a fantastic job coordinating multiple resources from Public and Government Affairs, IT, internal call center staff, to ensure that we get to where we are today. So thank you for your efforts, Christy, and it's on to you now.
Good morning.
Good morning.
One of the major changes SB 998 brings to the EMWD is it lengthens our delinquency process. So you can see on the left-hand side that emphasizes our current process, which start to finish is 50 days long from the day the bill is mailed to the day the county committee closed for non-payment. So the proposed process that we have come up with does add 38 days to that process. The proposed process does match the current process in the beginning, where the bill is mailed, the bill becomes due, and the past due process starts on day 26, where a late fee is added to the account. But after that point, it's where the process gets a little longer. So with that addition of 38 days, we felt the need to add notices to this process to continue to remind our customers they still have an outstanding balance with the MWD. So what we've added is a new set of notices. We have a second and third past due notice, and we've also added an additional reminder auto call. So this creates the same sort of cadence that we currently employ to remind our customers they have an outstanding balance and hopefully get them to pay before we're forced to shut them off for not paying it. So the end of the process continues just as we do now. We do have a final notice of disconnection, which will provide them additional options, which I'll speak to later, and until an account is eventually disconnected and closed for non-payment. But again, end-to-end, that does add 38 days to our process. So one of the basic things that SB 998 provides for customers is it provides them an opportunity to get longer-term payment plans. And in order to get that longer-term payment plan, they do have to meet all of the following requirements. So they have to be able to submit a medical certification that a primary care physician certifies that someone, either the customer or a tenant of the property, it puts their health at serious risk if they should lose access to water. And in addition to that, they have to be financially eligible. They have to be receiving some sort of assistance from the agencies listed, CalWORKs, CalFresh, et cetera, or they have to show that their annual income is 200% of federal poverty level. And in addition to those two components, they also have to agree to enter into a repayment with the MWD. So it is a very serious amount of requirements, and they do have to meet all three in order to get the long-term payment plan. So you may remember when Charles presented an informational update in May of this year, we were trying to decide whether we were going to handle this process internally or externally. We found from the regional meeting that we had one thing that all the agencies were in alignment with is they did want to handle it internally. So we followed suit, and we will be managing this process internally with a dedicated team in our customer service department. One thing that we also found as a best practice from that regional meeting is other utilities are requesting a copy of SoCalGas or Southern California Edison's utility bill showing that they're enrolled in CARE, because those requirements for CARE meet the financial eligibility requirement of SB 998. So we'll ask that as a best practice to prove financial eligibility, and we will carry on with the medical component as well. So when we get those documents submitted, we will review them internally, and we'll make sure that they're valid for eligibility. And then we will do outreach to the customer to set up the amortization plan, and that plan is not to exceed 12 months. So another thing that SB 998 requires is that the district has a written policy of discontinuation. That's going to be posted on our website. And that also must be available for customers should they ask for it in writing in six different required languages that you can see on your screen, as well as any other language spoken by 10% of the people residing in the service area. And that policy of discontinuation must include payment options for customers so they're informed of what they have available to them, as well as a formal mechanism to appeal or contest a bill. And while that appeal is occurring, you cannot shut the service off. So what we've done, and the actions we've taken to make sure that we have addressed the policy of discontinuation requirements, is that we updated all of our required notices. So those six languages that are required have been put on the notices that required them. We have established an informal internal appeals process where a customer calls in and says the statement, I wish to appeal my bill. We have an internal process for that. But we've also established a formal process that will be documented on our website. We updated our website with partnership with PGA. We've created a section of our website where customers are going in for payment assistance, and we're calling it EMWD Assist. And so the customers have an opportunity to submit their documentation in this section of our website, and they also have an opportunity to appeal their bill formally in the same section. So the next slide does kind of give you an idea of what EMWD Assist looks like. So what it does is it explains what the program's purpose is, it explains the conditions for participation, it talks about the medical and financial components. If a customer is unsure whether their financial eligibility meets the requirements, the list of low-income qualifications are fully lined out in this section. And if they've reviewed all the information and they've decided that they are eligible, they can apply for EMWD Assist at this point. So with SB 998 comes an opportunity for us to kind of review our internal practices. We know that SB 998 is going to cause EMWD to carry balances for longer than we're currently accustomed to. Our current aging, which accounts over 61 days owed, is averaging about 2.7%. And Director Pauly, at the last admin meeting, you were asking kind of roughly what is that. It's a little bit under 500,000. And so we know when we are amortizing balances over longer periods of time, we know that number is going to get bigger. So what we've done, knowing that it's going to impact potentially both aging and account collections, if we let customers carry balances for much longer time, potentially they may walk away from much larger balances. We're going to institute new debt collection paths. So we're going to implement collection paths with Franchise Tax Board, and we can do that in parallel with our current secondary collections process. And as a last resort, if a tenant leaves a balance at a property, we're going to make every effort to collect from the tenant. But if the tenant still does not pay that debt over the district, we will pursue the debt through the owner's property tax rolls. In addition to these collection paths, we've also standardized our guidelines for our customer service representatives regarding these delinquent customer interactions. We want to make sure they have the most consistent, efficient, and empathetic experience with us when they call in with this delinquent So another thing that I wanted to bring to your attention, but will be discussed more in depth when Charles presents to the board next month with his recommendation for fee updates, is SB-998 requires that we cannot charge reconnection fees any higher than $50 during business hours and $150 during non-business hours for customers that qualify financially. Our recommendation would be to standardize this fee for all customers, because the customers that pursue reconnection fees are generally the customers that are tending to go delinquent. So we feel like, you know, for the most part, it's the same customer class. So we'd like to recommend that this fee be standardized, and Charles will give you more detail on that in the next board meeting. So the next steps. Well, you've already you've already updated the admin code recommendations we made in the consent calendar, so thank you for that. You'll hear from Charles next month, as I said before. The billing system changes that Information Systems is working very hard on, we anticipate will be completed, as well as the testing in November of 2019, and we will be ready to go live with implementation in February 1st of 2020. And I can answer any questions.
No, I think when we talked about it in admin committee, there was a significant amount of the people that are always delinquent. And I can't remember what that percentage was, but it was like 35 or 40%, something like that.
You know, I mean, I think kind of from an overview standpoint, it's always been our objective is if a customer is delinquent, is to come up with a workout plan. We do not want to send those things to collections. Economically, that doesn't work for us, and it also doesn't work for the customer. And so many agencies, though, do not do that, and I think part of the driver of this legislation was to put those practices in place, many of them that we've had here already. So economically, again, it benefits us to do the workout plans. That being said, this does extend the time frames substantially. And so we, I think staff has come up with some great ideas in terms of, as Christy puts it, the cadence of noticing that when you're due or when you're overdue to try to minimize that. And I think the other things we've put in place are going to be very, very helpful. But, you know, I want to express my appreciation to staff for, as I joke, and Dan knows this, I said this before, the legislation was passed. I printed it out, and I went down. I said, you guys have to figure out how we're going to implement this successfully for the benefit of our customers and as cost-effectively as possible. I think they've done a great job. So I want to thank Christy and Charles in particular for that.
Yeah, it's really come a long way from the first time this legislation appeared before us at the board, because it kind of sent shudders through everybody. But I think you've done an outstanding job working through this process.
I'd like to chime in, too, and just say, Christy and Charles, you've done an outstanding job, as Director Sullivan indicated. I know this was a very difficult task. It's not something we asked for, but it looks like you have just come up with a really reasonable way to implement this. So thank you very much for your hard work. One question I just want to put on the record. I already know the answer to it, but just to put on the record here. We are not holding or keeping anyone's medical information here at the district. Okay, good. I just want to make sure that that is.
Yeah, for the medical portion of it, it's more of a the customer goes to their physician and they just certify without any information. It's just kind of a yes, no. Do I certify that that person has a medical condition? So there's
right.
No personal information.
Yeah, I just wanted to get that on the record, that we are not going to be the repository of people's medical information.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely not. We're not. We don't want to do that.
Okay. Thank you.
I'd like to see the doctor that would say, no, you don't need water.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. With that, I'll make a motion.
Well, there's information.
I apologize.
And I think as it's implemented, I just want to point out, we will come back to the board after implementation and give some performance metrics on this in terms of what the changes we're seeing in aging and other factors, just to give the board a flavor for how this is implemented and what the impacts are on our customers.
Well, I'd also just like to give kudos to April and her team. The website that's going to be used for the customers is really, really impressive. So I think it's going to be very easy for them to utilize and work through the new program. So.
Okay. Any further questions on that?
Thank you.
Thank you
very much. I know this is not the first time Christy's done this. You can tell it's very fluid. Okay, with that, let's go to the 5B, which is a drip kit program update.
Good morning,
and take a break now. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you for inviting me, and continue to update you guys on our drug kit program. Just to give you guys some background on this program, it launched originally in March of 2017. Although we didn't see the participation that we liked, we averaged about 4 applications per month for this program. We really saw value in the program, and we began to look for ways to increase participation. One of the ways that we did that was when the opportunity came up to apply for grant funding through USBR, we did that. And we were awarded that grant in March of 2019, and that's when we relaunched the program. So the total project cost is $140,000. $69,000 of that is coming from USBR. $55,000 is coming from Metropolitan, which leaves the district out-of-pocket cost around $14,000. This will allow us to distribute 1,110 kits. Each drug kit will convert between 250 and 400 square feet of spray area to drip area of planter bed area, with an annual water savings of 16,000 gallons per year each kit. So to kick off the relaunch of the program, conservation staff held a training event and distribution event. What made this event unique is the fact that we it wasn't just a training class, it was both a training class and a distribution event. And additionally, we had Rainbird staff and Imperial staff on site to assist with that event. And the way it worked is we really developed it and made it into a one-stop shop for the customer. So the customer could come sit in the training event that was here in the boardroom where Rainbird staff and conservation staff held the training portion, which was all about how to install the kit, and they were there to answer questions from the customers. In the lobby, we had conservation staff there to answer program questions, administrative questions, take applications, and distribute vouchers. And then out in the parking lot, we had Imperial staff and conservation staff on site to distribute the kits that day. The event was extremely successful. We were able to distribute 97 of the 100 kits that we ordered, and we had a 100% class participation rate. Here are some pictures of the event. We had the lobby set up to, again, welcome customers and process applications, answer any administrative questions that our customers had. We also had a table set up with breakfast pastries and coffee, which the customers really enjoyed. And then we have here, you'll see some of the customers in the lobby or in the actual boardroom during these training events. And then we have our conservation assistant and imperial staff out in the parking lot handing out those kits. So to date, we've distributed 467 kits. 97 of those we distributed that day at the event. 370 kits have been picked up at Imperial Sprinkler Supply in Tennessee. And I just wanted to say that this program has had such positive feedback that I wanted to highlight some of that here. And I'm just going to go ahead and read the last customer testimonial from Elizabeth H. Elizabeth states that, "I would like to thank EMWD so much for all of your help with this project. We have installed the drip system and it works great. This system has eliminated 26 regular sprinkler heads and a considerable amount of PVC pipes. The flexibility of the drip line makes getting water to just the right location easy, and kits were straightforward to install." Again, we've had such great feedback from our customers, and this is just a very small amount of the feedback we've gotten back from them. So you may be wondering how we were able to increase our participation, and what we did is we really took a look at barriers that were in the way, what was holding our customers back from participating the first time we went live with the program, and some of the things that we did is we removed specific barriers, and one of those being the application process. It was previously a 4-page application, and we took that down to 1 page. We also removed the cost for the customer, so it used to be $50 per account, $50 out of pocket per customer, and now it's only $0 out of pocket per customer. And then we also increased the kit maximum, so before a customer was only able to get one kit per account, and now they can get 2 kits per account. So by doing this, the results have greatly exceeded our expectations. As you can see see from the slide, in 2017, we had 50 applications received, and we distributed 41 kits. After removing the barriers, the things that we thought that were holding our customers back, that has brought up to, in 2019, within 6 months, 575 applications received, and 467 kits have been dispersed. So where do we go from here? Well, we're going to continue working closely with PG&A to get the applications coming in, get the vouchers going out to the customers. At the open house coming up October 5th, we will be running distribution that day, but we will be taking applications. We will have a kit on site so that we can let the customers know what it looks like, and then we'll be answering questions that day as well. And if participation continues as it is, we are actually ahead of the goal to meet our deadline by the March 2021 date. So with that, are there any questions?
No, fantastic news. Do we reach out to kind of the landscaping gardener community in this realm with this program? Or is it possible to? Or
we do. We do a lot of things. We're at a lot of community events, homeowners associations. We really pushed it on like Medicaid 24/7, social media sites, just basically every avenue that we have. We've sent it out there that we have these kits.
Okay. I think we've done a really good job of getting the message out. I'd just like to figure out if we could, that the kind of the boots on the ground folks that actually do the work on this and make sure they're educated and know the resources we have. But other than that, I think you've done a fantastic job of implementing this program. So thank you.
Yeah, I also want to point out, I think, kind of recalibrating the program, understanding what the barriers are, and also procuring, frankly, 90% of the funding from outside grant sources. Has been very helpful, and it's obviously very cost effective for us. Water savings sends the right message to the community. So I want to thank Rebecca and the staff for taking this program on.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a great program, and I think we also want to make sure that we acknowledge PGA, because you look at the neighborhood little thing that comes out. There was a thing in there the other day that you contact Amanda Fine. You want to pursue this a little bit further, and so it's just a great little deal. I know my front and backyard is all drip, and I love it, and so it leaves a little more water for the dog. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. With that, let's take a 10-minute break or so.